Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Martinez, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have two great guests here to introduce. This is first Sarah Amner from Quantum Vacuum to Global Impact. Sarah pioneers resonance-driven innovation, merging physics, sustainability, and human well-being. And then I'm super happy to introduce Benjamin Butler from Wall Street to Zen Temples. Benjamin Butler maps the future by living it, a roaming futurist reimagining tomorrow through courage, culture, and consciousness. But first, let us start with the song selected by Benjamin.
Because we've seen this all before. Culture fades with tears and grace, leaving us stunned, hollow with shame. We have seen this all before. Many tribes of a modern kind doing brand new work, same spirit by side, joining hearts and hands in ancestral twine, many tribes of a modern kind doing brand new work, same spirit by side, joining hearts and hands in ancestral twine, slowly it fades. Slowly we fade. Slowly you fade. Slowly you fade.
I'm very happy to introduce Benjamin here in the talk show. Benjamin, welcome here in the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. You're in Peru, you just said, right?
That's right, yeah. I'm in the Andes, in the sacred valley of the Incas. So in the same valley that Machu Picchu is in.
Oh, that's interesting. I think a few questions I will ask you later will drive into that. I would like to introduce you, which could be even something which takes 1 hour or so, but I try to make it a bit shorter. From the trading floors of Wall Street to conversation shaping the agenda of the World Economic Forum, Benjamin Butler has made a laugh out anticipating what comes next. As founder of the Embassy of the Future and advisor to initiatives including United Nations Resilience Frontiers, he stands at the intersection of markets, meaning, and long-term human destiny. A British-born futurist who left the UK a week after his final university exam and has been on the road ever since, Benjamin's journey spans Asia's Zen monasteries, global finance, indigenous wisdom in Latin America, and the world's most influential boardrooms. He forecast the dot-com crash, the 2008 financial crisis, and the crypto boom. Yet the deepest insights come not from charts, but from conversations, cultures, and consciousness. Fluent in Japanese and steeped in Taoist philosophy, he blends the systems thinking with soul, strategy with story, foresight with inner stillness. This is not just a story about predicting the future. It is about becoming the kind of human who can hold it. Thank you for being with us here, Benjamin.
You're very welcome. Very excited.
Everything starts very early. Sometimes it is a kind of seed, often in our very, very early years, how we start into the world. Yesterday, I sat in the train and I talked with a policeman and with an engineer about astrology, what it means and which months you are born into the world. If that means that if you are born entering the sun, it makes you a more positive person than if you enter the world with snow and maybe clouds or something. But I would like to go deeper, also asking you what early childhood experience is in your mind, which was really important to you for your further life. Maybe you look back to this, maybe this experience is a kind of flag for you. Do you have something you would like to share with us?
Yeah, I think early childhood, if I was to symbolize it, it would be with my bike. I would, I was born in 1975, and it was still an era where parents would let their children go out for hours on end and not really have to worry too much about them in the UK. So yeah, I would jump on my bike and go on adventures, and quite frequently try and get lost so that I can find my way back. So yeah, I think that probably was a seed for the rest of my life. Also, as I got a little bit older, in my teenage years, I used to play Dungeons and Dragons, which is a role-playing game, and I was always fascinated by the stories of journeys and adventures and Homer's Odyssey. I think Dungeons and Dragons really helped cultivate my imagination.
That's great. For the ones who don't know Dungeons and Dragons, can you explain a little bit what is so special about that?
Yeah, so it's like enacting Lord of the Rings, for example. So there's a dungeon master who sets the scene and describes what's happening, almost like the film director. And then there are all these players, and you can be like a warrior, a wizard, an elf, etc., etc. And yeah, it's just sort of like play acting Lord of the Rings. I was always the dungeon master, so I spent hours creating these fictitious worlds and writing the stories and mythologies of these lands. So yeah, it's probably one of the most important things I did as a child, and probably influenced why I wanted to go to the land of the rising sun as soon as I left university, and go on the adventures that I have.
And Benjamin, talking about this being away as a child for hours, and I remember also that I did this as a child, and my parents were really frightened when I did this, and they searched for me everywhere, but I was just sitting around the corner on a tree because I love climbing trees. Today, this is something you just said it with is not really uncommon that parents do this. Would you say that there are places in the world where you still can do this?
You know, my 11-year-old daughter lives in South Korea, so I'm no longer together with her mother. We're very good friends, but so my daughter goes to school in South Korea. She walks to school every day for
Oh.
several years, and yeah. So Asia is vast amounts of Asia are very is very safe. Japan, South Korea, particularly.
I felt the same when I was in China a few weeks ago, and I'm on a regular basis there. It feels much, much more safe to me. Do you think it needs another politician, it needs another government, or is the society, the culture, the main point of being more safe, feeling more safe?
I think it's cultural. I don't think it's the policing per se. I've never in countries like South Korea and Japan, I cannot ever recollect feeling it in a dangerous place. You know, you go to some places on Earth, you know, go to big cities in the US, and you take the wrong turn in, and you just intuitively know you're not safe. And I've never even found a single street like that in those countries, or even in China. Although, you know, China's a very big place, and you know, I think you could probably get in more trouble there than Japan, Korea. But yeah, East Asia's very safe.
I completely agree with you. We talked about your childhood. Who was the first person who challenged the way you saw the world? Who inspired you?
You know, I often cite my first housemaster at a school called Embley Park, Mr. Fawkes, because my early childhood at school, I had a terrible time. I flourished outside school. Like I said, I'd be on my bike going on all these adventures and playing and reading books, but at school, I just was clueless. I just did not understand anything that was going on, and I now understand why that was the case. But at about 12 years old, Mr. Fawkes, who was a descendant of Guy Fawkes, who tried to blow up Parliament quite infamously, he, I guess, like his ancestor, he was a bit of an independent thinker, let's say. He's the first person in authority that really said, "Benjamin, I believe in you." And I think within 18 months of him saying that, I went from bottom of the class to top of the class. So it was a sort of meteoric rise. Yeah, he challenged he. I think he helped set this critical thinking that I had the rest of my life. So we read a book, a play called Making History, and it was about a famous battle between the English and the Irish. And the story is told through the eyes of the English and then through the eyes of the Irish. And of course, they're completely different narratives. And I think that helped me realize that to see things from various perspectives, and of course the Zen training enhanced that later on in life.
You are very deep to indigenous people, and you are very deep also to indigenous practices. Indeed, you grow up or have grown up a little bit also with this, right? What myths influenced your imagination or your view on the world, on the planet, on life?
Which myths? I mean, obviously, the reading all these science fiction and fantasy novels as a child was sort of fertile grounds for the imagination. You know, I think famous philosophers and poets, including people like Johann von Goethe, would say that Homer's Odyssey was perhaps the most important book in Western literature, and I think that was a compass for me. That the idea, and not just Homer, but just this notion that we're, you know, life is not about trying to achieve a 9 to 5 job and buying a car and having a mortgage. Life is an adventure, and we're here to grow on that adventure. And so I think because of that, so I've always looked at life mythologically, and which really helps when I face adversity, because instead of feeling sorry for myself, it's, oh yeah, I'm in this part of the movie at the moment. You know, this is the Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, and I'm in a dark cave, but you know, this too shall pass, or once I vanquish this monster, I can move on and get closer to the end of the game.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. And I think there are many who would like to write a story of your life with all these heroines, moves, and the challenges you've seen. And yeah, the really spectacular things, but sometimes also the really great in the very small little things, right? I mean, you were seeing a lot of things, you're traveling a lot. I by myself, I'm a cosmopolitan. I love travel, but sometimes it's all, of course, a lot being in different time zones and so being away from home. What are your personal hacks for staying mentally grounded while living nomadically?
Well, nowadays, I mean, I've done meditation and yoga for a long time, and at the moment, my routine, I've just changed it again. So, the last 10 days, I've been getting up at like 4 a.m., which is a sort of a time that Zen monks normally meditate. You know, they see the veil with the other world is thin, or if you take a slightly more scientific approach, your brain waves are naturally sort of in the zone, and it's a great time to go deep in meditation. So I do meditation mantra, where you repeat the same phrase. That helps cut your thinking mind off so that you're at one with the universe. I have a very simple yoga routine, and I do a lot of walking. I used to be a triathlete, used to run, swim, bike, when I was more of an adrenaline junkie, working at an investment bank. So I'd work out twice a day. But now I like walking the mountains. It's exercise, but it's also a spiritual event for me.
Well, that sounds interesting, and I can't wait to ask you further questions also about about further practices, but also special experiences. For now, we have a small break of approximately 2 minutes, so please stay tuned, and we see each other after the break again with Benjamin.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise, elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, Benjamin, a few of your last words before the break were that the time where you were at the Wall Street, your mental health rituals were a bit different than they are nowadays, right? It was more about doing some sports or exercises, I understood, less that spiritual part of you. I try to imagine what difference this must have been for you, stepping out from Wall Street, stepping into a completely different life. Looking back to the Wall Street time of you, how do you feel, or what would you say is that what drives most of the people, and has this changed over the years?
What's driving what most people in that industry? So I didn't catch the question there.
Okay, of course. I mean, a lot of people will think when we talk about Wall Street of the movie Wolf of the Wall Street, of this male-dominated industry where men are just hungry for getting the next million, earning money, being so far beyond themselves that they don't even know exactly what they feel, what hurts them, just being so much in just feeling the power, the money, the idea that you can sell everything and buy everything. If you take that, if they take this picture, is this true, you would say? And would you say that it has changed during the time where you've been in Wall Street?
I mean, those movies are kind of fun to watch, but and there's there are pockets of finance that are like that. You know, I joined straight out of university. I joined Morgan Stanley as the internet bubble was kicking off, and it was very professional. Yes, that there was some greed, but I found, you know, my first roles were as a institutional stockbroker. So I would speak to 20, 25 fund managers every day, and we'd have discourse about different stocks, asset prices, and and most of the fund managers that I spoke to were felt a very strong fiduciary responsibility to their clients to make returns. So, yeah, and I think the very different world than the movies like Wolf of Wall Street. And it was a great job. It really helped me again cultivate these skills to look at things from multiple perspectives and to constantly challenge my own views. I had my views challenged 20 times per day by some of the smartest people on earth, and I also had access to an organization of like 50,000 employees. I could phone up experts on commodities in São Paulo or technology in Taipei, and it was like being in the CIA and having access to all this intelligence of what's going on the planet. So it was a fascinating place in order to really, it was an education in how does the world work, everything from politics to economics to technology. And of course, those skills help me in my role now as a futurist.
Very interesting to hear this from you. And I mean, I can imagine, and same here, that the fascination is there also when you have so many intelligent people around you, which are smart, which are fast thinkers. And I mean, this is nice. It's great because you feel among others. But on the other hand, of course, it's an own world where that what is standing above is a bit different to that what a monk, for example, would say and feel and want to prepare for his life. So, I mean, you stepped out of this. How was it? How did you get the signals? How did you get out of it? Was it also emotionally hard for you? Can you describe a little bit of that?
I never stopped being curious about financial markets, and I still am to a certain extent because they're a barometer of what's sort of happening on the planet. But for me, I increasingly felt some inner calling to make a deeper, bigger contribution to the world beyond just helping other people make money. And it expressed itself very abruptly one day. I was literally in bed and I just felt I can't get out of bed. So I called into my boss at the time, a Swiss bank, and said, "Look, I'm so sorry. I'm not coming in today, and I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow, and I'm pretty sure I'm not going to come in the day after. I think I've had something akin to a spiritual awakening, and I'm so sorry." And yeah, it was just like that. And
What was the reaction, Benjamin?
well, funnily enough, he said, "Benjamin, I understand where you're coming from. To be honest, if I didn't have four children, I'd probably quit with you." Although I can, I saw him on the front page of a Japanese newspaper the other day, and it seems like he's still in the same job at the same organization.
Yeah, I think sometimes the hamster wheel is a bit bigger. Sometimes it's a bit smaller. Sometimes it looks more colorful, but it's still a hamster wheel when you stick in the system. And changing the system stays as a wish. And maybe it gets you again when you're older and look back what mischances you would have had. But maybe not. Maybe the fear is the one which stays on top, right?
I think my biggest regret on my deathbed would be what I didn't do, that I have a constant yearning for adventure and doing new things and throwing myself into adversity. And I don't think I could have had a normal career and be looking to retirement.
There are a lot of people stuck in the same situation, and it has nothing to do with money, right? It has to do with fear, with comfort, maybe also just with being that deep in the culture or in the family rules and regulations, it feels better to stay in than getting out. But it's on the other hand so easy to stepping out of this. I mean, I'm, for example, I remember that a few days ago it was for a long period gray weather, no sun. And then I just took a trip and combined it, prepared a business trip to an area where I knew it's sunny and the temperature is good, and stayed there for a few days with great like-minded people. And then everything was good again. But most of the people stick in this story, and they prefer just to say, "Oh, it's so unpleasant. I hate the situation." And then they often feel really confirmation by talking with other people saying the same, "Oh, I'm feeling so bad." And it feels for them just as a kind of positivity because they met like-minded people. Do you think this is something which is a kind of over-country, over-culture thing, that in a world we are facing now, full of crises and change, digitalization and uncertainty, the people like to stick more in that where they are? Or would you say it has been always and everywhere, and it's just the rare people, just as you, like you, which are changing the world by changing themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think the human mind has a natural fear of change. You know, that's one of the biggest tenets of Zen and Taoism, that we live in a world of constant change, and but the mind doesn't like to embrace it. And particularly now, the change is accelerating. You know, Alvin Toffler wrote that book Future Shock in the 1970s. It's probably more relevant today than ever. You know, the concept that, you know, when I moved to Japan, I got culture shock. Well, for many people, the world is changing so much, it's like moving country and getting a culture shock without even leaving your own country. And that's going to accelerate in the next 5 years with, you know, massive tectonic shifts in global geopolitics, you know, re-emergence of Eurasia, the end of Western dominance, and the end of the American Empire. You've got the technology shift. There'll be huge job losses in the white-collar sector in the next couple of years, even. And there's a whole host of tectonic shifts happening. And of course, people at the World Economic Forum talk about the poly crisis, this convergence of various crises. It's all part of a natural cycle, and if you look at cycles of history, and we just happen to be living in probably one of the biggest inflection points that humanity's ever experienced. I think it's bigger than the Industrial Revolution or the Agricultural Revolution. So, but a lot of people are going to have no choice but to change. You know. It's like when you lose a job and your whole world changes. So it's exciting times, but if you choose to look at it that way, or it could be terrifying. It depends on your interpretation.
Absolutely. What daily thinking practices sharpen your ability to see patterns before others do?
Yeah, that's a good question. What I noticed in finance was often you can intellectualize and rely on your cognitive analysis, but actually, more than thinking, see, you use the word seeing, and I think that is, you know, from a Zen perspective, seeing something with clarity is much better than going around in circles thinking. I think my meditation really helps, but just always taking a step back and trying to look at the bigger picture, look at context. In the Western education system, we have a very reductionist approach to understand a given phenomenon. You tend to zoom in. You know, if you want to understand a flower, you tend to zoom in with a microscope and look at the molecular structure of it. But what I learned in Zen was the way my mind actually naturally worked. I always look at the broader context. So when a Zen poet told me, Benjamin, the whole universe is in the flower, the sky, the rain, the sun, the soil. That made complete sense to me. To discern patterns, I'm constantly looking at, you know, the broader context in which we're living. But I study history as well. I look at cycles. Initially I looked at business cycles, but then I realized, wow, there's cycles of war and peace. There are cycles of all sorts of phenomenon, and that really helps, you know, studying the 1929 crash and the 1907 Wall Street crash and various other moments of history really helped me prepare me for 2008, 2009, where I said, look, I think we're about to have a crash as significant as 1929. History helps a lot.
Unfortunately, our talk comes to an end, and thank you very much, Benjamin, for sharing these insights with us. I have one question I would like to drive. Do you have a sentence you would give leaders from today or tomorrow to care for their mental health while carrying global responsibility?
Yeah, I think everyone should have some form of meditative practice, but I think joy is also underrated. People, CEOs and leaders, can get really serious about anything, and they end up getting very serious about their spiritual practices as well. So I think laughter and joy is a crucial part of one's spiritual practice. So do what you love as well. For me, it can be dancing around the fire with, in an indigenous ceremony. It is a lot of fun for me.
Wow. Thank you for sharing the story, which is just building some great pictures in my mind and my heart. Thank you so much, Benjamin, for the engaging discussion and the inspiring insights. And I really look forward to our ongoing exchange, the impact we will continue to make together, and hopefully seeing in South America this year.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Annabelle.
Thank you. So after the commercial break, we will continue with the introduction of Sarah. So please stay tuned. We see each other back in 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, welcome, Sarah. I'm very happy to have you here.
Annabelle, thank you for having me. It's nice to be here with you.
So I would like to introduce you with a few words. And as for Benjamin, I could spend for the introduction even an hour. So I have to make it really short. In the heart of Switzerland, where precision meets possibilities, Sarah Alma stands at the frontier of tomorrow. As CEO of the International Space Federation and Advanced Resonance Kinetics, she leads bold exploration into quantum vacuum research, gravity control technologies, and resonance-based energy systems. Her work bridges quantum physics, sustainable energy, and biotechnology, fields often viewed as separate, yet deeply interconnected. Under her leadership, ARIK advanced current energy transfer solutions grounded in resonance principles, while ISF's R&D initiatives drive global collaboration and sustainable energy innovation. But beyond laboratories and equations, lies a deeper story, one of curiosity, resilience, and visionary courage. Sarah's journey reflects not only scientific ambition, but a commitment to inclusive innovation and human-centered progress, where technology serves life and discovery is guided by responsibility. So, Sarah, I know a little bit from you and about you, and it's really inspiring what you do. When we go back into your childhood, as a child, what first sparked your fascination with science and the unseen forces of nature?
I think I had a natural fascination with science, but really it was the unseen side of science. I felt just this, you know, as a child, you can't describe it, but I felt this kind of inert intuition that we were capable of so much more than we exhibited as humans on this planet. So this is almost like there was like a hidden superpowers. You know, when you're a child, you don't know what kind of name to put on it. So I think I called it magic. I was just obsessed with magic, trying to find the magic. Now today I understand it can all be explained with quantum physics. But back then as a child, I think I was just fascinated with that which I could not see. Now I understand it as, you know, the constants and forces of nature, which led me to the path where I am today. But yeah, I think, you know, and growing up in nature as well really shaped my childhood.
That's really, really nice. And about the people, do you have an experience you would like to share with us? People experience which really drove you and stay still in your head and in your soul, which was really challenging for you, changing something and driving your perspective?
You know, I think what really shaped who I am today and drove me from a past experience, going back again to childhood, I grew up in Northern California, home of the redwoods, those tall, like amazing trees that are 2,000 years old. And if you've ever been like in a redwood forest, you can use that word again, the magic behind it. And I also witnessed its destruction. This is back, I'm approaching 50 now, you know, the age of myself. But back then, we didn't have the sustainable practices that we have today. And I would see these amazing forests just being clear cut. And of course, it was devastating. But at the same time, I think I was truly inspired to make a difference, to bring this world sustainable energy solutions or sustainable solutions to this planet. And so I dreamed, you know, when I was a child of converting the timber mills into you know, companies that would make sustainable technology, whatever that was. And here we are moving fast forward today. That's exactly what we're doing. And I think another, when looking back, something else that really moved me is probably in my early 20s, and I was in meditation. And I was just devastated. I think I was just reading a National Geographic magazine or something about drowning polar bears and the devastation of the ecosystems, and just crying, just feeling devastated. And I meditated. And I got a very clear picture in my mind's eye of technology. Technology that it just lit up, it just sparked every essence of my being, deep in my soul. Like I just knew there was a solution behind technology. Being a business student, I always had a passion for physics and mathematics and chemistry, growing up. But I went the business route. I was really called into business. But I always felt that it's like there's something that can be explained if we can only understand the physics, the sciences at another level. There's answers in the technology just beneath our feet.
That's great. Showing me the picture of the big old trees on the one hand and the high technology where you're in. How do you stay grounded over the day? What are your habits for mental health, but also for staying grounded in yourself?
I have a lot of very conscious habits that I need to do to balance the long, long hours in the laboratory. Sometimes it's, people are like, oh, you need balance in life. And I think, first of all, somebody might look at my life and say, oh, it's actually not that balanced. I work very long hours, I work very hard. But part of my energy comes from that drive of what I call, the mission of our organization, which I just know in my heart is going to help this world. And that just gives me this energy, this drive. And I balance that with staying grounded. My biggest tool is getting in nature. Right now, our company is Swiss based. Right now, I'm talking to you from our research and development laboratory where engineers and physicists sit in the French Alps. I'm actually very close to Mont Blanc. I could practically see it out the window. So I have these big, just majestic mountains around me. And it's amazing if on a day where it's nice enough weather where I could take my shoes off to ground myself in the forest, to lean against a tree, to listen to the white noise of the water, it just instantly resets. Being in that coherent space, that coherent energy. I also have at my home, Tibetan sound bowls, gong, to create that resonant feel, to create they're not just mystical. There's actually a science to them on how it really reprograms the field. And so using my sound bowls, obviously meditation really grounds me, holding my strong intentions. I've always held strong intentions for the last several years, just being the highest service that's available to me to try to send out a coherent field, to attract others that resonate. So the meditation practice as well, movement practice is also very helpful.
That's great. And do you do this alone, or are you sharing this with family, with friends, maybe with kids or so?
For me, part of grounding when I'm after the busy, busy day, I almost just need the still time, the quiet time. So consciously setting aside a certain amount of time in the day where there's, you're unplugged from social media, from cell phones, from all the noise, and just being on my own. So a lot of times just walks in nature by myself. So, my partner will try to encourage me to go out on the mountain bike with them or stuff like that. It's like, nope, I just want to stop and smell the roses. I want to go slow. I want to be on my own. I need to be in my own energy space. And that really helps me.
That sounds really, really good. And what does it feel for you like to lead research and quantum vacuum and gravity technologies? Because this is on one hand, I think very male-dominated area. On the other hand, it's very futuristic. And you're there very at the end of that, what people can imagine when they are not influenced with these topics.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like science fiction what we're working on. When I say words like gravity control, but actually we have the physics to back it up. We work with brilliant physicists and engineers that have written the physics that's leading to these advanced technologies. So what does it feel like to lead them? For me, I feel like my job is to hire the best and the brightest and then hold that vision, hold the coherence, hold the endpoint of the mission. And just fill that mission with the best and the brightest. So sometimes, it feels like such a big job. I'm like, really me? Am I, I admit I have moments of self-doubt. Am I really the one to lead this mission? But then I remember we don't have to do it all. We don't have to have the expertise. We just need to surround ourselves people and then hold the vision. And that's actually going back to the meditation. That's one thing I do is I hold the vision of the future. I hold the vision of where we're heading. And That itself creates a field. It creates intention is very powerful. And then like attracts like, the resonance of those who are also attracted to the mission. And so, I say, be the flower, don't be the bee. Let them come to you. And so when I hold that strong intention, especially in meditation and creating that field, it is amazing how things just kind of flow with more ease and grace. And the right people come in, the right engineers, the right resources, the right collaborators. I kind of call it, the feminine way of leading, actually. So yes, you commented this is a male-dominated area, which it truly is. But and I think, this male, it doesn't mean if you're male or female, just that the energy behind the male leadership is to, do the 5-year pro forma and plow through no matter what it takes. And I think the feminine, and again, it doesn't mean if you're female or male, but kind of the more the feminine energy behind leading is you know your endpoint and you hold it and you let it flow. You do plant the seeds, you work hard, but you kind of take it more step by step as it emerges.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing this. What long-term thinking models guide your strategy while being with a head somewhere in the deepest future, but on the other hand, on the ground with your employees?
Yeah, again, holding that vision of the future. And this might sound esoteric, but one way I keep myself from stressing, like, oh, are we on time? Are we on time? Is to rely on something that is called divine timing. And when you look back at the history of this planet and humanity, you realize things emerge when they're meant to emerge. And so sometimes I feel the stress of like, oh, we needed this technology yesterday. Look at what's happening with the energy solutions. They're going nowhere. We have to bring this to the world now. But then I remember we're doing the best we can, and the world is going to accept it when it's ready. That said, and I appreciate you having me on the show because it is nice to let people know that this technology is on the horizon because I feel like our field needs to be ready for it. There's examples like somebody winning the lottery that I think 90% of them lose all their money within 2 years or something because it's not in their field. It's not, they're in scarcity mode, for example. And so waking people up, like, no, we do have the opportunity to have abundance because we are going to have infinite energy and just imagine what that's going to create. So you could kind of trick, not trick, but like encourage the divine timing of things and the timelines by getting the information out there, letting people know that it exists, it's real, and then the steps emerge in a much, much faster way.
Absolutely. If you want to explain what you do, the technology behind, in a few easy words to people who have no idea what it is, can you do this?
I can, and it's actually easier to explain to non-physicists than physicists. In the university system right now, they put you in a tight box. It's hard to step outside of that which they teach. But if you just step back for a moment, the layperson, anybody, and you look at nature, and this explains so much about the technology that we're working on because you can see it. And I think, when you look at, well, let's go down to a very small element. Let's go down to the proton. The proton, non-physicists might not know this, but they keep oscillating, I mean, they keep spinning. They do not degrade. The proton will not go away. When you slam it with a particle collider, it reconstitutes itself. The proton keeps spinning. Where does it get that energy from? I'll tell you. At the very, very fine level, smaller than atomic level, they're called the Planck level. And you might have heard the term zero point energy or the quantum field, quantum vacuum fluctuations. What that means is that space is full of energy. It's all around us. It's the same energy that keeps that proton spinning in perpetuity, that keeps all the everything in the cosmos spinning. It's a zero point energy. And so we're learning to tap that and extract the energy. And this is a very harmonious way of producing energy. It's not blowing things up. It's not colliding things. It's not fusion. It's kind of, again, the more feminine way. You're tickling this field to create gradients in it where you can actually extract usable energy. And so it's and in doing so, it actually even creates a coherent field, which is very good for human health. And we're learning ways to harness that as well, which translates into the biotechnologies that we have. And the same physics can it tells us how to what the mechanisms are behind gravity. So then we're able to control the field as well. So we have some very, very interesting technologies coming our way on this planet that does give humanity a lot of reason to have hope.
That's really great. I mean, I wish we have more time, but it's in the end, this is a great last sentence as you said, because yes, I think hope is something a lot of people lost being here on Earth while facing all these crises. And therefore, I would like to ask you also if you could send one message to the next generation of innovators, what would this be?
You know, to dare to think outside the box. It's that it's those that push. It's like if you're sensing skepticism, if you're sensing pushing the box, you're probably going the right way. It's going to take innovation. It's going to take those willing to push the limits to take us to new levels. And that's what our team is doing, and that's what's going to make a difference. So dare to be brave, dare to think different, dare to push the boundaries.
The ones which are interested to see more of that, can they visit you also in Switzerland to see more of your technology?
Well, we are having some amazing biotechnologies come out to the market. We do have one product on the market right now, which is a piezoelectric quartz, which recreates that coherent field that charges our water. We can burn our body. It's arkcrystals.com, ARK crystals.com. And the technology is only a handful of years away.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Sarah, for sharing your insights with us, and giving us a hope that everything will go to the better. Thank you so much for making the world a better place with exactly that what you do. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing you, hopefully, again soon in one of the next conference where like-minded people like us are.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me on the show. And if somebody does want to dive into physics a little more, our website is spacefed.com, so you can learn more about what our engineers are writing. They write articles and keep people updated on the technology as well.
Thank you. Also, maybe via the magazines, you can do. Let me know. Yeah, I'm happy to drive this further and support you.
Thank you so much for that support. This is for humanity, so we need to help each other and collaborate and getting it to everyone.
Exactly. So that wraps up our episode for today of We Empower. Of We Empower, the radio show, which helps people to get insights and celebrating the strength, resilience, and limitless potential of people around the globe. Join us again next week as we continue on this empowering journey, sharing real stories of triumph, upliftment, and empowerment. Your presence and engagement means the world to us, and we appreciate you taking the time to tune in. Remember, this time is a gift for you. Don't hesitate to get involved. Your voice is valued, and together we can make a difference. Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together, we rise.
Tell me something.